time for Coffee with the Chicken Ladies, a podcast for people who love chickens.
Hey, everybody, and welcome. It's Chrissy and Holly from Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. We're here. This is episode number 179 of our podcast, where we talk about everything chicken, family, fun, and
more chickens.
More chickens. We drink a ton of coffee. I'm talking a ton. But most importantly,
we hug chickens every day.
And we kiss them too, don't forget. We brew coffee from a little coffee house in historic Bel Air, Maryland. Holly Ann, what kind of coffee are we brewing today?
Today is some delicious cinnamon flavored coffee.
It is absolutely delicious.
It really
and
is.
We have cinnamon creamer too.
Yeah.
Okay, so are you ready to sip some of this delicious cinnamon coffee and chat?
I am, but first, a word from our sponsor.
We have some exciting news to share from our sponsor, Grubly Farms. They're here, new and improved, Grubly's World Harvest.
I'm a longtime subscriber, and my flock love the healthy, nutritious treats, plus orders $40 and more ship free.
If you haven't heard, Grubly's has a fantastic layer pellet and crumble feed. It's packed with plant and insect protein, perfect for those picky chickens and ducks.
Grubly Farms makes food and treats for healthy pets and planet.
To support us and Grubly Farms, use the link grubly.co/coffee. Try it today. Okay, so how are you doing?
Wow, got a brooder full of chicks, getting ready to have a brooder full of geese.
Yep.
In other words, slightly overwhelmed.
Okay, so we're recording this, but this will be out, and I will have hot water when this drops.
Yes.
But as we're recording this, everyone, I do not have hot water yet.
You're on your last day of cold water.
My last day, they're coming out tomorrow to put in the hot water heater. Can you believe almost 3 weeks with no hot water?
No, I can't. It's been insane.
This is what I say. When you have a home warranty company, you have to always be on them because I don't know if they're looking for a way to get out of it when you have to, you know, replace something, but it takes time and patience and it's a long time.
I will tell you that Pete just dropped ours.
It's crazy.
Because it just was not of a good value anymore.
You're like, come on, it's a hot water heater. I mean, it shouldn't be that big of a deal. And then what they say is, well, we're waiting to hear from the plumber. Then you call the plumber and the plumber's like, no, we gave them all the info. Then they're like, no. And then they're waiting for an email. And we went back and forth.
And while all this was going on, you and I were waiting for our chicks to arrive, which is stressful enough on its own.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, yeah. Good times.
Hot water heater will be in tomorrow.
Yay.
So as you're listening to this, I'll probably be in the shower taking a nice hot shower. I'll be on my like 15th hour of a hot shower.
Oh, come on now. Your water heater is not that big. You'd be back
replenish,
to cold water.
Replenish. Go, right? Go, go. Refill. Refill. So, yeah. How are y'all liking chick spam? Because chick spam is the way to go, right?
Chick spam is happening. Just know that in a month, it's going to be gosling spam, too.
We're spamming it up.
Did you like the taste of spam when you were a kid? Did you ever eat spam as
no,
a kid?
No. My mother never served it.
Mom did occasionally. It's nasty.
We're like that phone call that comes in that says spam likely.
That's us.
With the chicks. We're
spamming hard.
Answer the phone. It's the Coffee with the Chicken Ladies.
Well, you always say people never know.
You never know. And that is the thing. If you know when you could get a phone call from me, honestly.
I feel the same way.
You never know when you're
going to.
Hey, you know every morning you're getting a phone call from me.
Generally, yes.
If you're out there sometimes and I don't want to type, you never know if that phone's going to ring. It could be me saying, hey, y'all, how you doing? So, you know, the other thing is, and before we get going, I want to put this out there because Andrea over at the Chicken Love Box, in the spring, we tell her all the time we love it when she does this, but she puts polyvisol in the box.
Yeah, it's actually a generic form of polyvisol.
Same difference.
Exactly the same thing. And it is a fantastic thing to have on hand if you have chicks coming.
It's like gold for chicks that have problems.
Yeah.
And, you know, a subscription box in the spring that puts it in there and you know that you're getting chicks. Some people didn't understand why it was in there. But when your chick is having a problem, you're going to understand and you're going to be thanking God you got that polyvisol. So that's why it was in the box.
It's good stuff.
It's awesome stuff. And here's the thing. If you're thinking of getting chicks, go over and get it now and just have it on hand.
I mean, some people will say, why can't you just use NutriDrench? And you can, but the difference is NutriDrench does not have all of the vitamins or as much of the vitamins as polyvisol. And that's why we swear by it.
And it has calcium where your chicks don't need it.
Right.
So on that note, if you're listening to our show and you're loving it, head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a written review. It does amazing things for the growth of our show. Hit that subscribe button for multiple reasons. You never miss an episode. It shows up in your library. And it's a free way to help our show grow. And if you're on Spotify, hit that 5-star and subscribe. Same difference. They're counting them over there too.
If you're looking for other ways to help support the show, you can tell a few chicken-loving friends about us. You can share your favorite episodes on social media. You can visit our Etsy shop. We have t-shirts. We have mugs. You can become a patron of the show, patreon.com/coffeewiththechickenladies. Thank you again to all of our amazing patrons. We love each and every one of you.
We really do.
And the other thing you can do to help support the show is visit our website and our show notes, use our affiliate links and discount codes, and buy products from our sponsors.
Yay!
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
Do you like subscription boxes?
Does it have anything to do with chickens?
Of course.
Then yeah. Let me take a minute to tell you about the Chicken Love Box. If you love goodies for your chickens and you need to go to chickenlove.com.
I love the Mega Box. Tons of useful products for my flock and a chicken tea for me.
You can't go wrong with a chicken tea. They are so cute and so soft.
In the April box, I absolutely love the chick leg bands and the organic soap set with hen decoration.
I am loving the Chicken Spirit long sleeve tea, and those chick vitamins, they could save a chick for sure.
Boxes start at $39 a month. They ship immediately after your order, and shipping is always free.
Such a great deal. Don't wait. Get off the nest and click already. Use the code CWTCL50 for 50% off your first box of a 3-month subscription or more. That's chickenlove.com. That's chickenluv.com. Get your subscription today.
The Breed Spotlight is brought to you by Murray McMurray Hatchery, defining quality for generations. For over a century, Murray McMurray Hatchery has remained a trusted family-owned business, working tirelessly to ensure our poultry meet the highest standards.
Whether you are an experienced enthusiast or just embarking on the journey, look to McMurray Hatchery for guaranteed quality, rare and heritage breeds, low minimums, and all the supplies you need to raise your flock. Request a free catalog today.
There once was a chicken in the USA. This is a Breed Spotlight for today.
Breed Spotlight, yeah!
At least it kind of had a marching cadence to it. Yeah. No one got to hear the one you were doing before this, which was...
I scratched it, man.
You were trying to do a fife.
I told our editor, take it out, take it out. So, yeah, that didn't work.
That didn't work.
No. So, yes, this week's Breed Spotlight is...
The Delaware.
An all-American chicken, man.
Is a wonderful, wonderful American breed.
Look at my coffee mug today. Does it remind you of a chicken?
Well, there's a chicken on it. So, yeah, it reminds me of a chicken.
It's a big white chicken.
Could definitely be a Delaware.
It could be a Delaware, man. It could be the Delaware.
It could be. The Delaware, this is definitely one of our favorite of the American breeds. The Delaware is a large, dual-purpose, all-American heritage breed chicken.
We both have one.
They were developed in the state of...
Indiana.
Via Delaware.
Oh, I got that wrong. What?
In the state of Delaware in 1940 by a man named George Ellis.
Now, if you go over to McMurray on their blog, mm-hmm. We do have an article over there talks about the Delaware in detail also. We love the Delaware. It's one of our, like you said, no surprise, it's one of our favorites.
They're really fantastic birds. Now, here's some good news. The last time we profiled the Delaware was a couple of years ago, and they were in the watch category of the Livestock Conservancy's conservation priority list. They are now moved into the recovering category.
Confetti! Confetti!
I mean, it really is great.
I was throwing invisible confetti, if anybody wanted to know.
Yeah, I was just going.
You were looking in the air like I was actually throwing something, though.
That's 40 years of knowing you, man. Never know what you're going to pull out. Now, according to the Livestock Conservancy, the Delaware chickens were originally called Indian River. That was the original name of the breed. Indian River is a river and an estuary in Delaware.
It's like an inlet.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you've been there. We've been there together before.
Yes, we have.
We've been swimming in the Indian River.
Yes.
In that little inlet because you used to vacation with me when we were kids.
All the time as teenagers, yeah.
Yeah, we went together. And we used to love going up there.
Yes, it was pretty.
So Maryland and Delaware border each other. And the Eastern Shore is really close when you're in Ocean City, Maryland to Delaware. And so when you vacation in both.
Right.
An Indian River Inlet is a very popular place for to go when you're there.
Yeah, it really is. There are so many things we love about this bird. They were accepted into the American Poultry Association Standard of Perfection in 1952. So it probably took, I guess, 10 or 12 years to get them in there. But I think they've stayed there because they do have such a nice reputation as a great chicken and a nice show chicken.
Just all around.
Yeah.
Even their personality laid back great.
Yes. Yes. Now, Delaware, we're just going to have some geeking out fun right here because since we're Marylanders and Delaware is like...
We live in Maryland, hon.
Yes. And Delaware is like next door. So Delaware, the bay and the river were named by an explorer in the early 1600s for a man named Thomas West. Thomas West was Lord Delaware. And he was one of the... I'm not making it up.
Delaware.
Delaware. D-E-L-A-W-A-R-R. Delaware. And he was an early governor of colonial Virginia. So the state took its name from the river and the bay, and the chicken took its name from the state.
It's a Delaware, man.
Delaware. Delaware. The Delaware was created by crossing New Hampshire hens and Barred Rock roosters, specifically that mix.
Now, what you realize, and a lot of times, Barred Rocks are used in a lot of, they're big time foundation.
Absolutely.
Because they have a reputation of being, you know, a hardy chicken that can lay a lot of eggs, so they're used, and they're barred on top of it. But the New Hampshire is not used as much.
No, and the New Hampshire is interesting because they are completely derived from the Rhode Island Red.
Right.
And so you just have some interesting genetics there. These are like bedrock American chickens. I mean, these are really widespread popular chickens for a reason.
Right now, I'm doing my Fred Flintstone feet for bedrock.
Oh, for God's sake.
But, you know, when you really noticed... But when you really noticed it was when we went to the Ohio Nationals and you went down that bantam aisle.
Yeah.
And you saw 5,000 New Hampshires.
New Hampshire bantams. They'd been bantamized.
They'd been bantamized. Bad. I mean, big time. And you're walking down that aisle and you're like, one, two,
I know,
50,
where
60,
does it end?
70. Like, it's a very popular breed. And you know what? People like them. They were supposed to be the top of the line of the Rhode Island Reds.
Right. Yeah, they were selected for very specific purposes. So anyway, back to the Delaware. New Hampshire hens and Barred Rock roosters, the offspring were intended to be commercial broilers as well as layers. So like they were going for a really, Ellis was going for a really hardcore dual purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And they did dominate the industry for about 20 years, especially in the Delmarva Peninsula. That's Delaware, Maryland, Virginia.
All this stuff is like you hear, it's just like second, like a little whisper in our ears. Delmarva, we hear it all the time.
We grew up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But after about 20 years, they were displaced by the Cornish Rock Cross.
Right.
So for better or for worse.
For better. They were taken out of that role. Thank you.
Now, the genetics of this cross have a couple of interesting effects, right? If you breed a Delaware rooster to any New Hampshire or Rhode Island Red hen, you will produce a hen that looks like the Delaware. Okay?
Okay.
If you breed a Delaware hen to a New Hampshire or a Rhode Island Red rooster, you get sex-linked chicks.
Wow.
The mature male offspring will have the Delaware pattern, while the pullets will be red.
Now, if you can't tell the difference between red and white chicks, I got a problem.
Some mornings, I have a problem.
Oh, I need my coffee. What color is this
chick? I need my coffee and my glasses. But no, it's very specific and kind of confusing. But if you have it mapped out in front of you, you know, it makes sense
to you. It does totally make sense. So I want to go into what this chicken actually looks like. They are what I like to call the supermodel of the chicken world.
For good reason.
They're super tall.
Yeah, they're tall.
Now, Rita is my Delaware, and she's the only white chicken in that one flock. And she's like the biggest chicken in the flock. So I can see her from the 2.5, the 3 acres from the house to the back, basically.
I was trying to think. Apple Blossom is my Delaware, and I was trying to think. Apple Blossom does not stick out in that flock because she's with Jersey Giants and Speckled Sussex.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so... Rita's with the Speckled Sussex, but Rita is like...
And she's white, though, and she's tall.
She sticks out. And you know what? That personality, it's like you can't get enough of Rita. She's just amazing.
They're wonderful hens. I mean, we'd heard that they were, you know, gentle and friendly, but we got them. And they also take their laying very seriously.
They're gentle giants.
They are.
We both have said that they lay like torpedo eggs, which is kind of funny.
They do. I don't know why that is.
Okay, so let's go into what they look like so you can tell if maybe you might want this chicken for your flock. You're going to want this chicken for your flock. Okay, so they're almost completely white.
Right.
They're a big, big armful of chicken, let me tell you this. And they've got like silver gray, like broken barring around the neck.
They're not big, like big chunky or big fluffy. They're big, like they're just a
they're kind big of bone. A, it's another big bone chicken.
A slightly supersized chicken. Honestly, the only other chicken I have that's bigger, you know, taller and more statuesque than Apple Blossom is Jane Goodall the Langshan.
Now, when I pick up Rita, that's an armful.
That's a
of
solid chicken.
It's a solid chicken. Yeah. It's another in the Husky lane going over there to get some stuff. Okay. So
I prefer to call them statuesque beauties. Thank you very much.
They are. I mean, she's a supermodel.
Yes.
Okay. So they do have some broken barring around the neck. So you're going to notice that there's some barring. That's the barred rock coming out little, like, you know, here and there.
And it's kind of silvery. It's not solid black.
And they do get a little bit of color on the wings, on the end of the wing, on the tail feathers. It almost looks like a little bit like a Colombian pattern, but it's not.
It does. It's just that it's broken and it's silvery. It's actually quite pretty.
Yeah, they look like a version of Light Brahmas in Sussex.
Yeah.
So they're really beautiful chickens. Now, they do have those tall yellow legs that I like.
Oh, yeah.
Those muscular, tall yellow legs and feet.
Not quite in the same category as the Malay.
No, but they're a nice tall chicken.
Yeah, nice big feet.
Moderately sized combs and wattles. They're red. Really beautiful, this chicken. Now, here's the thing. When we went to Ohio, what I realized, those chickens were even more massive there.
Yeah, because they're breed standard, yeah.
And the coloring was, they had even more barring around the neck.
They did.
So I'm wondering, like, you know, like, I don't know, what comes in, I guess, gives them more barring or whatever. But
I mean, I'm sure that there's people who are showing them have been working on selective breeding.
Probably.
To really play up certain characteristics. They were beautiful.
Yeah. Now they're, like we said, they're big. They've got long backs and deep breasts. They definitely have.
That's probably left over from that dual purpose breeding that Mr. Ellis was working
on. And they're, I mean, I wouldn't classify them as medium. I classify them as a large chicken.
Uh-huh.
Roos are coming in at 8 pounds. Hens are coming in at 6 pounds. They're a nice, big chicken.
That's good sized. It is.
And it's just, they're a great chicken for any homestead. I can't say that enough. I love them.
I mean, the only thing, and this kind of surprised me, because I did hear people saying they had a bit of a spicy personality. And I'm chalking this up to the fact that we each only have one. Apple Blossom is often the bottom of the pecking order.
Rita's the bottom of the pecking order with Clover and Truffle.
Yeah.
Okay, the three of them.
Right.
Even Peggy.
Yeah.
Okay, who is 3 pounds.
Yes.
Of a leg bar, goes over to Rita. I've noticed that Rita does this weird thing, like with her neck too. Like she backs out. Like it's a submissive thing.
Yeah, it's a submissive thing.
It's a submissive kind of thing that she does. And that goes into the personality. They're just lovely chickens. I feel like they're great in a mixed flock. I see nothing spicy about these chickens at all.
We don't have them in pairs or trios or large amounts, though, because I have a feeling that, like the Rhode Island Red or the New Hampshire, they can be a little more aggressive in a pack.
Okay, but let's go here. They were brought up with 2 Andalusians each.
My Andalusians are way higher in the pecking order than Apple Blossom.
My Andalusians look at Rita like, are you serious?
I know.
Like, you triple us in size, but we're going to take you down.
I know. It's, well, then my Andalusians are ruled by a Fayumi who's tiny. But, so the bottom of the pecking order is Apple Blossom. It is Croissant, my Simon Favreau's, and it is Blanche Dubois, the Easter Egger. Those are the bottom of my pecking order.
I got the duo of Truffle and Clover, best friends forever, BFFs.
Yes.
And Rita.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, Peggy, that little leg bar that's 3 pounds is fierce. She's the mini supermodel. She looks at them and she's like, oh, no.
She's a petite model.
And she's fierce, man. She's spicy. And so she gives it to them. But this chicken is just, if you want a good chicken for your kids, this is just a good family chicken.
They would be like a really nice bird for 4-H projects, for kids doing 4-H. I mean, they're just like all American chicken.
We can't say enough about
them. They're beautiful in photos. I adore Apple Blossom. I wish I hadn't waited so long to get a Delaware.
Now, never ever forget, we did an interview with Penny over at Happy Days Farms. Uh-huh. We love Penny. Uh-huh. Penny is amazing. And she had Adele.
Right.
A Delaware. She's the one that turned us on to the Delaware.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to her and she's like, there's nothing better than a white chicken on the green grass. And that is so true.
It is true.
They're beautiful that way. Now, let's get into egg laying because that's really important. They're going to lay pretty large torpedo-shaped, maybe, eggs for a week, about 200 a year.
Yeah.
So, you know, they will go broody if given the right circumstances. Mine, Rita, never gone broody, thank God.
Apple Blossom has not even shown a hint of wanting to go broody.
So I'm okay with Rita. I'm great with it.
I'm okay with it.
I don't need no broody in there. No, no, no.
In that flock, for me, the Jersey Giants are the danger for broodiness.
Now, the Delaware, this is what we think. They're underappreciated.
Oh, 1 absolutely.
1,000,000%.
They have really impressive egg-laying ability and gentle personality together, which you don't always get. So those are fantastic. They're very good free rangers, but...
You can't have a white chicken out there.
They stand out like a sore thumb.
I told you, like, okay, so my property's 3 acres. My house is in the middle.
Right.
So I guess it's 1.5 acres on each side, maybe?
Yeah, probably.
I'm on a corner. It goes all the way around. I can stand in the house and watch what she's doing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's the only one I can really see.
Right.
They're going to stick out. So you think if I can see her from here, a hawk's eyes are better than mine.
Absolutely.
So you really, or a fox's. I mean, you have to watch them.
Of all my chickens, I can see Apple Blossom and then Pecan Praline, the light Brahma. It's like they're just this giant white target. If we can see them, then a hawk can see them and a fox can see them.
They have better eyesight than us.
So you definitely need to make provisions for them to free range because they're active birds. But you've got to watch predators.
You know, the other thing I like about them is they do well in all climates because they're large, but they're not over fluff.
Yeah.
And they're large, but they're like the athletic large, like a basketball player large.
Yeah.
You know, like they're going to be able to take everything and kind of...
They're country strong.
They're country strong.
That's what you said about me.
I also said that about... Okay, so when our second coop was delivered from Penn Dutch...
Oh, that guy...
Yeah, he delivered yours first.
Oh my God, he moved the coop by himself
the
over to the site.
Are like 800 to 1,000 pounds. Okay. Yeah. No lie.
No lie.
And all of a sudden, he just lifts it with his back and moves it. And I looked at him, and no lie, I said this to him, you are country strong.
I know.
Like, you are country strong.
I knew exactly where you were going with that.
Oh man, that kid, he was country strong.
He's the sweetest guy, too. He's always the one who delivers our stuff.
He is so nice.
He'll probably be bringing us the goose coop.
Okay, so here's the question everybody wants to know, because now everybody wants Delaware. We want you to go out and get the Delaware.
Yeah.
We do, because it's an awesome chicken. Underappreciated, underused, under everything.
They're just fantastic. And they're friendly as it is, but if you put in the time with your Delawares, you're going to get really, really super friendly chickens.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Okay, so where does everybody go? Well, we know the answer to this.
McMurray Hatchery has a gorgeous line of Delawares.
If we do say so ourselves. Ours came from McMurray. We love ours. They're amazing. Go over there and get the Delaware.
And you can find them from most hatcheries. They're not one that I've ever seen in local farm stores, but that doesn't mean, you know, in your region, you might not find them. And you can always check with the Livestock Conservancy's Breeders Directory.
They're one that I feel like should be in the farm supply store, but isn't.
I know.
I never understand why it is not.
Totally agree. I think the Delaware could make a good beginner's chicken. I would not put it into a flock with other mean girl chickens. But if you just started off with a flock of laid-back hens and had a Delaware in there, I think that would be a perfect beginner's flock.
Yeah, because they're going to be at the bottom of the pecking order.
Exactly. They probably do well with Cochins and Barn Velders, maybe.
Yeah, I've never seen her go after anybody.
Yeah,
never.
No, Apple Blossom either. Yeah.
Okay, so here's part of the show where we say flood us with your pictures of your Delawares. Hey, on Insta, hit the mention button. It's a little button when you put your story up. Hit mention, put our name in, and it will share your story to us, and then we can reshare the story. That way I can share your pictures. Would love to see them.
If you're looking for a chicken coop that's produced in a planet-friendly, sustainable way, try Nestera.
Each coop is made from highly durable, 100% recycled plastic that keeps the equivalent of up to 2,000 shampoo bottles out of a landfill.
Their clean, modern design will fit into any garden or run area and comes with an industry-beating 25-year warranty and a range of handy accessories.
Simple to put together, so quick and easy to clean, and most importantly, red mite resistant. Your chickens will love it.
Quick shipping from Nestera.us.
For a 5% discount, use the affiliate link in our show notes, on our website, and on Instagram. Link in bio. Check them out today. Roosties proudly sponsors Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. They're back with an innovative new product. You're going to want to check this out.
It's an extra large set, a 14-pound feeder and 3-gallon water with steep anti-roost lids. They're made of super durable material. You can either stand them on legs or hang them on brackets on your coop or fence. They're easy to remove and clean too. Plus, they look awesome.
We personally use Roosties and we're huge fans. So if you're raising chicks or keeping chickens, check out the Roosties store on Amazon or follow the link in our show notes.
UK chicken lovers, this one's for you. Get happy, healthy hens with EcoNourish's live calciworms. Enrichment, nutrition, and protection in one tasty, sustainable pack. Scientifically proven to support glossy feathers, strong laying and skeletal health,
protect from disease, and improve gut health and immunity. You'll also bust flock stress by stimulating natural instincts and get eco bragging rights. Visit econourish.co.uk and use the code COFFEE15 for 15% off your first order. Your chickens and the planet will hug you for it.
Okay, so let's move on to main topic.
Yeah. Today, we are super happy to welcome back to the show Stephanie Turow and Michelle Brune, the authors of Small Scale Homesteading. You may be following them on social media, Minnesota from Scratch and Forks in the Dirt. Ladies, welcome back. We're so happy to see you again.
Thanks for having us.
Welcome back. It's so awesome to see your beautiful faces on the screen.
You ladies are
some of our favorites, and we love chatting with you. We feel like we're like connected somehow because your partnership's somewhat like our partnership, and it's a connection.
I think we were saying that I may be more like Chrissy and Stephanie's a little bit like Holly, and we kind of fill the same roles. It's really, and it works because you know what? Women can really work well together too. There's not, doesn't need to be all that crazy stuff. Can support each other and love each other.
And it works well when you like opposite stuff because there's no like power struggle to get everything else, you know? So it's great.
I think the introvert and extrovert, that partnership does work really, really well. It does.
Yeah. And like through the book writing process or even just through the like social events and stuff that we've done, it seems like if she's not feeling well, I can pick up the slack. Or if I'm not feeling well, she's like raring to go. And like, so we always can help each other that way too. It's been cool.
It's really great.
Yeah. And I never stop talking, so we're just good.
That might be the truth.
I think it's the truth. But I can own it.
You got it, girl.
I got it.
So today we're going to talk a bit about small-scale homesteading. There's a lot to cover with that topic. But the first thing we want to check in with is, how are your chickens doing? And are you adding any new chickens this year?
Oh, I am not adding new chickens. I'm holding back. I may already be over a limit. I'm going to be good right now. And all of my hens are doing so well together because I had kind of integrated a couple different flocks together. I rescued a couple from some different friends that were done and like had only one or two left. So that plus we raised some babies 2 years ago. So they're all like doing really well together. And there's harmony in the backyard flock. And I don't want to mess with it. Yeah, it's kind of amazing to see, especially where they started not loving each other.
You don't have the young and the restless back there. So that's good.
No, it's wonderful. They're like happy. They're happy girls. I mean, there's a leader, right? Myrtle. She's the one. But she, yeah. So she lets everybody know. And then
I love that the leader's name is Myrtle. I just love it. Love it. Love it.
Yeah, that was my son who named her, too. That's pretty funny. So
that's cute.
Myrtle.
I hear Myrtle and I think of a Southern lady of the year eight. She's like 89 years old, like with a cup of coffee. And then she's like, oh, yeah, you need to get back in here. So that's great. I love that name.
It ended up fitting her really well. Yeah. Steph, you've got a really good flock, too, right now.
So we are only supposed to have three in my town. So originally we got four and then one was a rooster. So he had to go. People were complaining. So then we had three for a couple of years. And then one got sick. Was it last 2 years ago, maybe? And we tried all the things and she passed away, unfortunately. So then we had two and it's like, I don't want just two. So then last year we got teenagers. We got a couple pullets and that was a lot harder than I expected to get them to blend with my other two. Yeah, they were mean. Like my nicest chicken, Phyllis, she became such a mean girl. I could not believe how mean she was. I'm like, what is happening? But anyway, it took about 3 months of like integrating them before they lived together. And they're good now. But geez, that was a lot
With like this, the smaller number of chickens, I keep hearing that it's a lot harder when there's only like, you know, six or eight to like bring in two new ones or four new, like it's a lot harder. If there's a larger flock, it seems like you can integrate a couple a lot easier. Have you guys found that to be true? Yeah.
I did, but I know Stephanie's problem because on the Young and the Restless, there's the Phyllis, who's the redhead, like the evil one.
Well, that's Smarty Pants. Smarty Pants is the red one, and she is evil. But she somehow got Phyllis on her side.
Not surprised. I'm so not surprised. With a name like Phyllis. I mean,
yeah. When you only have two hens coming in and two hens that are there, like, there's four hens in the spotlight, and there's nothing to provide a buffer, and they're just on each other all the time. Yeah.
But they made it through.
They did. They did. And now they're all laying and it's like, yeah, we got all these eggs again. And
great.
I shared one on social media yesterday, this picture, my tiniest one, my tiniest chicken blossom. I think it's a double yoker. It's like bigger than a duck egg.
Wow.
And next, I have it in the photo and all the other eggs in the photo look small, but they are large eggs. So this one egg is like huge.
It wow. could be a triple. Now, the next thing I want to say is congratulations. The book's 1 year anniversary is right about now, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Not a year. Love your book. It's in our bookshelf in our studio. We always are looking at it. And I saw it in Tractor Supply the other day.
Yes. Cool. Thank you. Yes. Congrats. We have them in Tractor Supply locations across the whole country, which is huge. And we sold out of the first 10,000 copies and it was like 3 months, right, Michelle?
Yeah.
Three months they were sold out. Yeah. So
fast.
We don't know any numbers right now, but it's doing well. We do know
good.
That.
So well, I will have it linked in the show notes as well. So if you want to buy a copy, and we highly suggest you do, can't find it, go to the show notes. It will take you right to the book.
Let's talk a little bit about the premise of the book and let's put it in real life, because what we're going to talk about is creating basically an egg and veg homestead. And we want everybody to know that you can do this on as little as a quarter acre or less, or if you want to be homesteading that way, it's possible. And that's part of the premise of the book, is what you can do if you're in suburbia. If you want to be a homesteader, there's lots that you can do. So what should somebody start with?
Do you want to go, Steph, or should I start? I'll start us off here. Yeah, as far as getting going on like a suburban homestead, I think a lot of people start with gardens, right? And growing some of your own food, it's one of the quickest like turnaround things in a homestead, because it's you plant it and then you harvest it like in the same season. I think that's a really great place to start. But really, chickens aren't far behind. They're so easy really to integrate, and they become part of your homestead garden in your backyard because the chickens are there creating lots of input, right? Lots of compost additions with their, when you clean out the coop, but they also make great second use out of all of the plant matter that you can't eat, like the bottoms of the cauliflower and like the extra kale leaves that got too tough to eat and enjoy, right? And then they're getting their calcium that way. So you don't have to bring in extra calcium supplements. And instead of just throwing that on a compost pile, you're getting eggs and chicken poop to add to the compost pile. Yep. And everything gets like recycled once more. Chickens are just valuable. I mean, besides them being really fun to watch and all the other things, they're truly like valuable, even in a small backyard homestead.
Yeah.
So what are some of the crops that you would suggest that someone would start off with as a beginner in a suburban homestead for veg?
Well, we always tell people to start with an herb garden. Like, just begin with an herb garden, put it by your back door, your front door, wherever you have the right sun, because then you'll see it and you'll use it and you'll remember to water it. But then the next thing we tell people is to grow what they want to eat, because all too often people will grow like what's kind of trendy. And then they're like, well, I have all this and I don't know what to do with it. So grow what your family actually enjoys. Tomatoes, at least for us, are super simple, but that's the other thing. Things that are easy for me might be a challenge for someone else, and it's just trial and error. And so we also tell people, don't get discouraged, because I mean, something that even works for me this year may not work for me next year, even if I do it exactly the same way. And that's just how gardening is. But yeah, I don't know. If you have chickens, like I always like to grow like kale and broccoli and things that they can kind of rip off and eat. And I put those kind of around the edges of my beds because they'll be scratching through my gardens and they think they're being really sneaky, ripping some off. But I'm like, that's for them. So.
I like that
Phyllis,
idea.
That's Phyllis. Phyllis is like, oh yeah, I'm getting away with something over here. I mean,
it's always Phyllis.
See, it's the name. It's the name.
I like that idea. I like the idea of planting around the perimeter to keep the chickens out of the not the good stuff, but to keep the chickens out of the stuff you want to eat. That is a great idea.
You know what? My chicks are not named yet, and I might have to name two chicks after you guys, but it's going to be Myrtle and Phyllis this year.
I love it. That's
I might have to do that. And then when they get in trouble, I'm going to be like, Stephanie and Michelle. Oh.
Well, we'd be honored.
Yeah. We'll take it. We'll take it. We'll roll with it. And then, Stephanie, I don't know how your chickens don't like then just jump up and attack all of your gardens, because mine, I have to plant things on that grow up and over my fence that's already 6 feet tall to keep them out of my vegetable garden. So it's really, like you said, like gardening is different, and something that works for you doesn't, in like my flock. And I don't know if it's because they're just the breeds that I have or what, but man, they want to get in there really bad. And it is probably the speckled Sussex that's the worst, right? Like she is adventure bound. So I don't know.
Many people say the speckled Sussex is this meek little chicken. They're just pretty. They get bullied. I'm here to say that is not true. Mine is the game warden of my flock. And her name's Katie T. Biscuit. And she is like, keeps everybody in order. She's like, oh, you don't go that way. I don't think so. And, you know, gets them. So she's not meek. Everybody's like, oh, speckled Sussex, they get bullied. No, they don't. No, they don't.
Mine doesn't. No.
No.
God, that's funny. Yeah, no, they all have their own personalities, that's for sure. But yeah, I definitely love that they can eat all the extra veggies right out of the gate. So fun.
Yeah. Now, I know a lot of people feel really discouraged. They really want to be homesteading. They can't afford, or they're not in a position yet where they can get some acreage. But you don't have to. You can start where you are. I love the advice to grow things that you like. I've grown a lot of things I didn't like because I felt like I had to. And then you don't eat them and it's just a waste of time and space. So obviously, you know, growing food that you and your family or even you and your animals can eat is a huge step. And then maybe the next step is edging into preserving. So what would be some really easy entry level preservation projects? Obviously you have, and Stephanie, you have several cookbooks out on preserving. I will also link those on our website. But what would be some simple preserving projects for people to dip a toe in with?
Well, I always like to ferment, you know, I think fermentation is probably the easiest. Well, freezing's pretty simple, but for example, if you've just harvested a bunch of beans, and that's really simple to just put into a jar with salt water brine and some garlic or dill or whatever, and then ferment that. Now that's done. All you do is just give it 5-7 days and then you have fermented dilly beans and you can put them in the refrigerator. So if you can learn to ferment, that really helps you preserve. And then I would say, you know, with berries, like jams are super duper simple, and you can make jam with just like 4 cups of berries and some sugar and do a small batch of jam. I always tell people that these small batches add up. You know, I look at my pantry at the end of the season and I'm like, wow, look at all that. And this is mostly all small batches besides pickles and jalapenos, because I go crazy with the pickles and the jalapenos.
I need you to teach me how to do pickles, because I see them at the Amish market all the time by our house, and they have so many different flavors. And I'm like, oh, I need to grow pickling cucumbers and do this, because they had like these, we're known for Old Bay, right? So they had Old Bay pickles. Ooh. So delicious.
Oh, that's cool. Interesting.
They were good. Yeah. So good.
I just bought your small batch preserving book not too long ago. And I specifically wanted the small batch because it's just me and my husband here. So we don't need huge quantities of things. I think that's great advice. Just a few jars of something and you can build on that.
Well, and the other benefit to small batch is when I started canning a long time ago, we'd make like huge batches of stuff because those were the recipes I could find. And sometimes we didn't like the stuff. And now we've spent all day and a bunch of money at the farmer's market. And then I'm just giving it all away because I don't like it. So that's another perk to small batch. It's less investment of your time and money.
The other thing I got to say about that is that I don't want to look at my pantry and have 17 jars of the same thing either. Because So I want to have 4 jars of apple butter, 4 jars of applesauce, like 4 jars of, you know, just ginger apple butter, you know, like, so you can make different things as things come, you know, ripe. And I think that, or when they're ripe at the farmer's market, and make it really easy on yourself that way too.
Now, this is probably going to come out after Easter for sure, but your video last night about growing your own Easter grass was the cutest thing I've seen in a long time. And you just used oatmeal, right? You just used oatmeal?
It's oats, just straight oats. So like oats that you would use, like I have oats because I grow oats for my chickens in the winter. So we have a long winter here usually in Minnesota. So I got to get them some greens and something to fun and like scratch around in. So I grow oats for my chickens and then oats as like cover crop in the gardens too. So I just had extra oats and I was like, I got to do this again. And it makes like the most beautiful, thick, like grass in an Easter basket. Yeah. So
try that this year. We're recording before Easter. So I'm like, look, you're not getting that same old stuff. They're going to be like, what the heck is this? I'll be like, it's alive grass.
Do you have to actually buy oat seeds to get them to?
Yeah, so rolled oats won't work at all. But so oat seeds, but like from your feed mill or whatever, yeah, they'll have cheap bags of oats. Yeah.
Awesome. That's a really good tip right there.
I love that idea. And it's so cute too for a gift basket for any time of the year. If you just want to give somebody a special something and you grew them the grass, I mean, that's pretty cool. Those are the types of things that are in the book. Those are the types of things that you guys are talking about doing that are so fun. And yeah, we'll make
it like little sustainable swaps like that, right? Just it doesn't have to be like mind blowing, move to the country and 40 acres and homeschool your kids. You can really make big changes, like small steps, right? Small steps to make big changes. And especially if a lot of us are doing them, that's going to make a way bigger impact than a couple people doing it, you know, on the back 40 or whatever. I think it makes a bigger difference.
Now, talking about making an impact, we always talk a while before we even start recording. We have to catch up and chat, right? But we were talking and Stephanie was bringing up about what a great job you did in your community changing those chicken laws. Let's talk about that. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Well, when I moved into the home we're in now, it was not legal to have chickens. It was against the city ordinance. You also couldn't have bees, but you could have pigeons. So that's
good figure.
That was the last time like the city ordinance had been like updated, was like in the 40s, I swear. But it had been brought up to the city council a couple years earlier and had been shot down. So what I did was wait 2 months until the old guy who didn't want chickens was gone. I talked to my city council person and he suggested that we really like wait because there was no way this guy was a holdout and it was just going to be really difficult. And I felt really lucky to have the chance to sit down and talk with my city council person, but really they work for you. Like this is what our government is for, especially at this grassroots city level. Yeah. So I reached out, I emailed him. He got back to me. We sat down, we talked. He said, how about if I do some reconnaissance? And we figured out that we would wait a month to officially bring it up. And then in the 2 months, he would be gone and somebody else would be in and anybody else would be better than this guy. And so we did. And then it was like nerve wracking to have to get up and like testify or whatever at the little city council meeting. I mean, there was like, you know, 60 people there or something, but there were a lot more people there than normal because of the chicken issue on the agenda. So I had a couple extra friends with to talk about why they wanted chickens too, or why they had chickens. And then two people, one man and one woman, also showed up who I had no idea. They just saw that it was going to be at the city council meeting and they came to say why we should all be able to have chickens too. So it was really interesting. We ended up licensing the chicken coop, not the chickens themselves. Uh-huh. So if they were more worried. So we live in a really northern spot where it gets really cold. And I think the city was worried about, number one, property values. Like, they didn't want some lopsided chicken coop thing set up. And then they wanted it to be warm enough to keep the chickens over winter here. So that's how our city handled it. And yeah, and it was an interesting process. And it felt really good to be like part of that change.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Woo. But it only took like 3 months from start to finish, right?
Yeah.
Raise the roof.
Wow.
And I would suggest too, if you are in like a different part of the country and you're not sure, like look up your city code or just call your city. And then if it's not legal right now, like look to your local feed mill or your local chicken supplier. They are going to know like the lay of the land a little bit too, because they know where you can and where you can't and who's a problem and who's not. And if there's like an interest in it in that town, they've been really helpful around our Twin Cities.
So can you have roosters also?
No, we cannot.
Okay.
No, well, no roosters. And there's a number limit and everything. But I do think that, you know, that makes sense when you're in a smaller space, because we're in like regular suburban lots. I have just under a half an acre, and, you know, most of my neighbors, I have that or less than that. So it's close. I mean,
everybody has to do themselves a favor and follow you guys on social media over on Instagram, because the stuff you put up, you're always coming on our feed, which makes me so happy. I'm like, I love seeing your stuff. It inspires me. And then also is like, at the same time, like, I need to be able to do this better.
No, we want to be like supportive, not like, no.
Oh yeah, you
You're
are
just regular old people here.
You inspire me so much that I'm like, okay, I've got to get a greener thumb somehow. Somehow it has to happen.
We'll work on it.
Yes. Yes. Let's do this.
Yeah. No, I'm so glad we got that change, because I can't imagine being here now without the chickens. Like, I feel like we would have had moved somehow or something. Like, honestly, I'd had chickens for years and years and years before that, and in a couple different areas and in locations and groups of chickens and everything. And I really missed it. So I'm really glad that we were able to change it.
There's such an important part of a homestead or even just a garden in any space, no matter big or small. So many of us have had to deal with poor soil, you know, in properties where we've moved in or properties where our family's been for decades. And they're really integral to helping you rebuild soil. I mean, my place was a mess because the previous owner dumped fertilizer on it. And so I have toxic levels of zinc in my soil.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So the sheep and the chickens have really gone a long way towards helping us build better soil.
Cute.
So what would you say to someone who says, well, look, I can't be a homesteader on small acreage. I can't raise meat animals and I can't provide all the food for my family. What would you say to encourage them?
I think there's lots of different ways to be a homesteader. And especially today, when the majority of the United States population lives in more urban areas, what it takes to be a homesteader, as far as what Stephanie and I kind of go by, is your home can be a place of production, not just consumption. And if you look at it like that, that really opens up the door and makes you feel like empowered to be able to make some of those changes. If you are growing some of your own food, great. If you really don't have space, then buy from your local farmers, make some relationships there, because local food, I do believe, will save the world. Like, eating local does matter, and how that food was grown does matter, right? So if we make, you know, changes where we can and then do some preserving, even like we were giving us talk a couple weeks ago, and we really dug into just drying your own herbs. And that's what, like, preserving, drying is so easy with herbs and it's better for you. Think about the cost savings of like buying a pack of basil seeds, growing those out, freezing some. If you wanted to freeze them, blend them in oil, chop it in olive oil, stick it in ice cube trays, and you have the most brightly flavored basil pesto, whatever you want. I mean, it's amazing. But drying them, sticking them in your spice rack, it's so cost effective. It tastes better. You can even have more nutritional value, because think about how long those herbs have been on a grocery store shelf.
Oh yeah. I've done that with my rosemary. It's so easy. I love rosemary. I've done it. I dried it. Love it. And we always say egg-wise, it takes a month from the point of lay to get to the grocery store, right? Oh. So you think about the freshness there from the day it's you're getting at day one versus the start is day 30. So without all the chemicals and everything else. So, you know, just veg and egg together are a great combo. You can add them. They're easy to do in any size, any lot. You guys, you know, it's just you're amazing. I love what you do. I love what you do.
Thank you. That's really kind. I think there's so much desire to kind of get back to some kind of a relationship with our food. And I think being able to start with some protein and eggs, but then also you can grow protein in beans, right?
Exactly.
You can grow a lot of protein in your beans. And beans are so easy, especially whole beans when you're growing them up and with vertical gardening ideas. There's so many ways to add so much more bang for your buck kind of if you've got limited space. And then just have fun with what you're growing too and be able to, you know, enjoy growing it, to have the time outside. So you're in your garden, enjoying that outdoor space. And then, yeah, being able to reap your rewards and enjoy the food too.
So awesome.
I'm a tofu eater and I grew soybeans and it was easy and it was fun. And now I have a bag of my own soybeans to make tofu with. I couldn't believe how easy it was.
Yes. Okay. What do you remember the variety? I'm super curious which kind you grew and what you loved.
Yes, they were. So I may be mispronouncing the name of the soybeans, but it's Shinanomi.
Oh, okay. No, I haven't grown that one. Cool.
I couldn't get over how easy it was. This year, I'm branching into a really weird cabbage. I found the seeds for a cabbage called Fielderkraut, and it's this tall conical. You've heard of it, Michelle?
Yes.
It's supposed to be a great sauerkraut cabbage. So, Stephanie, we want to ask you, what is your favorite sauerkraut recipe?
You know what? Just keep it basic. That's probably my favorite. Just green cabbage, but you can add anything in. I've never had a kraut I didn't like. I'll say that.
Right.
But sauerkraut's so simple to make. Have you guys made it?
No.
I have not.
Okay. So it's just you chop up the cabbage, massage salt into it. You know, then you'll create like a natural brine while you're massaging the salt into it. And then you pack that all into a jar and then add a little jar weight if you have it. And then push the weight down so that the brine comes over the shreds. And then you just wait weeks. Many weeks, 5-6 weeks usually, okay. If it's just straight cabbage, but then it's just the best, and so
that sounds
simple.
Super easy. I mean, worst case scenario, go buy a cabbage at the farmer's market and make yourself some sauerkraut. What a great way to start.
Yeah, but then you can get creative and add some grated carrots and some chopped up onions and garlic, or, you know, it's all good though. Some jalapenos, all delicious.
We're going to end with a question of what's the future looking like for you ladies over there?
I don't know if I mentioned this last time, but when we turned in our manuscript, we had to shave off like 30,000 words.
Yes.
So we do have that still. We've been busy with promotional stuff in life. So we haven't gotten to that point yet. We did bring it up to our publisher and they said yes. So I think, you know, at some point in the near future, we'll get back to that. And then we have classes lined up throughout the year already. And Michelle's doing some separate and I'm doing some food preservation again in the fall.
Why are we not closer to you? Because I would be your best pupil. I would be in the front row, like, tell me what to do.
Yeah, that's why, Stephanie, I'm telling you, try some online, like live. We got to figure that out because there are people all over that want to understand what you do and how easy it is. And that is like hard, like gardening is like a whole different thing, but you're in the kitchen, you have the stuff right there. I think that would be so cool. So that's my like, go for it, Stephanie, do it.
Absolutely. You should. Online courses. People appreciate that so much. Yeah.
Oh, I will work on that. I should do a lot, but I will work on that.
You should.
Well, ladies, we just want to thank you. We always have the best conversations with you. We just want to thank you for coming back to visit us again.
You know you're coming back.
Right. We'll definitely have you one again in the near future. Everyone, remember, the book is Small Scale Homesteading. It is not only informative, it is a beautiful book filled with really great projects. Go get yourself a copy. Again, It's linked in the show notes.
And you can just go to Tractor Supply.
On the shelf at your local TSC. Yes.
That's it. Thank you, ladies. And we have to get together soon. Coffee, wine. Yes, anything. Definitely.
You got it.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Okay. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
We just want to thank Stephanie and Michelle one more time. It is always so much fun to talk to them. They're the most inspiring women. And don't be constrained. If you're in a small house, small lawn, townhome, you can be a homesteader. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
You can. And I always feel that there are counterparts. Stephanie's you and Michelle's me.
It's pretty funny, yeah.
And we've just clicked and become friends over the year. And it's been so nice.
Yeah, they're great.
Love those ladies. Okay, so let's move on to...
Cracking the eggs.
Cracking those eggs. Now, last year when Steph and Michelle came on, we did a rhubarb drink.
It was a rhubarb. So we used Stephanie's recipe for rhubarb shrub, and then we made it into a rhubarb sour, maybe?
Right. So if you really love some rhubarb, check out their episode from last year, and you'll get that recipe.
Yeah.
Now, this year, we're doing a rhubarb
tart.
Because we're tarts, man.
Tarten it up. Tarten it up.
I'm a tart.
This is a delicious spring tart. If you're not a huge fan of rhubarb, what's wrong with you? I mean, if you're not a huge fan
isn't
of rhubarb.
Isn't this where last year I called you a rhubarb snob?
I am. I have heritage breed rhubarb, I'll have you know.
Heritage breed.
So if you're not a fan of the rhubarb, though, all kidding aside, you can switch out.
Strawberry.
You can, right, substitute strawberries. I wouldn't do all strawberry because that can be super sweet, but you can at least have it.
Yeah.
And this is amazing, served with a scoop of vanilla ice cream.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so let's go into the ingredients that you're going to need for this. 1.5 cups of all-purpose flour or gluten-free flour, 1/2 cup of powdered sugar, or 1/4 cup of granulated sugar. Now, listen to that because that's different. 1/2 cup of powdered sugar or 1/4 cup of granulated sugar.
And I will say, for the best consistency, do that powdered sugar if at all possible.
Mm-hmm.
It really makes a really nice crust.
1/4 teaspoon of salt, 1/2 cup, which is 1 stick of cold butter or dairy-free butter cut into small cubes. And here's our egg. We got 1 million eggs, but this recipe is only going to use one.
This is if you're
at room temp at that.
If you're a regular crust maker, you'll recognize that this is a rich crust or a sweet crust.
Right, right.
And it's a really nice counterpart for the rhubarb tart. So you're going to either use a handy-dandy pastry blender, which I love, or food processor. You're going to blend together the flour, the sugar, and the salt. You're going to add those butter chunks, and you're going to either pulse on the food processor or mix in with your pastry blender until the mixture becomes crumbly and resembles coarse meal.
And that's why you want your butter to be so cold, because it's going to...
You want to have some bigger pieces of butter for maximum flakiness. Add your egg and either keep blending or keep pulsing until it's no longer dry and it starts to clump together. Just starts to clump together.
Right.
You're going to turn that out onto a lightly floured surface and form it into a ball. It should come together pretty easily. If it's too sticky, you want to add a little bit more flour.
Right.
Flatten it the way you would do with a regular pastry crust. Flatten it into a disc, wrap it in plastic wrap or Reynolds wrap or whatever, and refrigerate it for at least an hour. And while you're waiting, you can make the filling.
So let's go through the ingredients of the filling. You want 4 cups of the chopped fresh rhubarb, which Holly's like, that's my best grown in my garden.
It's my heirloom heritage breed rhubarb.
I think last year I remember saying that you could get it at Walmart or something. And you were like, well, I grow it in my garden.
Of course I grow it in my garden.
And I was like, you're a rhubarb snob.
Yes, I am. Guilty as charged.
3/4 to 1 cup of sugar, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, and an optional, 1 tablespoon of orange juice or orange liqueur if you're feeling, you know.
I love it. With a little Cointreau in there.
I mean, yes, the orange does set that flavor off just a little bit. And 1/4 cup of cornstarch. So that's your filling for your tart.
Right. You want a medium or large mixing bowl. You're going to combine all the filling ingredients. The rhubarb, the salt, the sugar, the cornstarch. Mix it all together till it's fully blended. And then let it sit for about 10 minutes. Mix it again. Set it aside while you're rolling out the crust. And let it get nice and juicy. You're going to preheat your oven to 375 degrees Fahrenheit. You want a floured surface. You're going to grab your ball of dough. You're going to roll it out into roughly an 11-inch circle. transfer it carefully to your tart pan. If you're using gluten-free flour like I do, you know it's going to fall apart.
Yeah, it's different. It's definitely different.
It is. So you're just going to use a little bit of cold water and you're going to patch the cracks. It's not tart. I find tart crust pretty forgiving because you can easily kind of pat them back into shape.
Pat, pat, pat.
Yes. Yeah, like that. Pour that juicy filling into the tart pan. Spread it to the edges of the pan. You're going to bake for about 50 or 60 minutes or until your fruit filling is hot and bubbly.
Wow, that's cool.
Take it out of the oven. You don't want to serve it piping hot. Let it cool a bit. Let the cornstarch do its work.
It'll thicken up for you.
Exactly. You can serve it. Again, we recommend a scoop of vanilla ice cream. They go beautifully together.
Or you can make your own whipped cream. It's very easy.
Exactly.
Put it right on top too.
Any of the above.
Try it. You might like it. Let us know what you think. It's a great springtime. Have lunch with your bestie and talk some chickens, or just have a little dessert and talk chickens, whatever.
Chicken Lady Rhubarb Tart.
Yeah, yeah. Try it. Okay. So let's move on to retail therapy. Retail therapy. Yeah. This week's retail therapy, we are talking some additives that you can use in your water for your chickens. And we find that these are very, very important to have on hand.
Super useful. So our friends at Grubly Farms.
We love ourselves some Grubly Farms.
They sent us some probiotics and some vitamins and electrolytes. They're both in like little...
They're canisters.
Yeah, little canisters. They're in little jars.
So the vitamins and electrolytes come in one, and then the pre and probiotics come in the other.
They come with a tiny scoop. You need one scoop per gallon, so super easy to make up.
The scoop is miniature, and I like this because you don't feel like you're using so much. I love this product and how it's condensed that to get such a big bang, you don't need to use that much.
Right, and our birds have been on these. Again, follow the instructions. You always want to follow the directions right. for using water additives. But this is a little thing, but it actually, I love this. I can put these on the shelf right above the utility sink where I fill up and have them right there. The fact that they're in a canister and not just in an envelope actually makes them super easy.
Well, yeah, because they're not going to, if they get wet, that's okay.
Right, right.
They're in there. And you know, the thing is, you can use the little tiny little scoop and do all your waters. And I love the fact that you can get it in a bigger size so you're not going through something super quick.
Right.
Now, these are not ones that you're going to use every single day.
Right.
I kind of use them once a week. Mm-hmm. Or I use them when...
As necessary.
As necessary for any kind of stressful thing that's going to go on.
Right.
Say, and I this works. Like, we had a spell of like 5 days of rain.
Oh, it was an endless deluge. It was crazy.
I used them. For like 2-3 days of it, yep. Because weather is stressful to chickens who live outside. So you want to make some provisions for that.
You do. And probiotics just work really well for chickens. When you think about the fact, we use probiotics, right, for good gut health. But chickens have a crop and then the rest of their digestive system.
Right.
The crop itself is its own kind of bio.
Right.
Bio environment, I guess. And giving them some help with some pre and probiotics can really help to balance that crop. Keep it from being too acidic or too alkaline and just keep everything flowing through the bird the way it needs to.
The other time that it would really do your flock some good to have this is high egg laying times because you want to give them a little boost of calcium with this. It also gives them a boost of everything just to keep that overall body healthy. And like I said, it's so easy to make them up. They're really good. We have been using them and we absolutely love them.
We really do. I like to have the vitamins and electrolytes on hand, especially in hot weather.
Now, here's the thing. You can go over to Grubly's and you can either do a one-time purchase and choose the size you want.
Right.
The one-time purchase, you can either buy in a 30-day supply or a 90-day supply. That's that supply that I really like is the 90-day supply.
Yeah.
It's 90 gallons. Okay.
That's pretty amazing.
Of water in one container.
Yep.
And it's like $45, but it's 90 times that you're giving them water.
That should get you through, unless you have a gigantic flock, that should get you through a whole season of hot weather.
Exactly. Or just whatever. Like
right.
If something comes up, like anything I said, stressful. I just give it to them once a week as, hey, here you go. Here's some extra stuff.
Yeah, a little balancer.
Yeah, exactly. And they're amazing. So the other thing is you can go over to the website and you can subscribe to them so that they're delivered to you every 3 months.
Yeah.
And you get a price break of about $5.
That's not bad.
So they have one here. If you get the 90-day supply, you're spending 50 cents a day on your flock.
That's not bad.
That's not bad to give them extra vitamins and minerals and pre and probiotics and all those things. Now, they do sell the vitamin and electrolytes separately from the pre and probiotics. And the other good thing is I put it all in 1 gallon. You can use it all together.
You can. Yep. I really love that too. It's great.
Okay. So check it out. You're going to love it. And your chickens are going to love being on such a great vitamin supplement. Okay, so should we tell everybody what we're going to be talking about next week?
Next week, we're spotlighting one of the cutest things ever created, and that is the call duck.
Oh, yeah.
I know you're crazy for the call duck. We are so happy to have our friends Mark and Katie Metzer join us, and we're going to talk about duckling care.
We've been keeping this one under our hat for a while. We're so excited.
We love us, the Metzers. Cracking the eggs. We're going to go over duck eggs 101.
What do you do with an egg that's from a duck?
How are they different than chickens? What do you do with them? All that stuff. It's going to be a lot of fun. Retail Therapy is a book review. We're doing Stories Guide to Raising Ducks by Dave Holder-Reed.
Because you got to know what you're doing.
Exactly right. You can buy it right on the Metzer's website.
It's awesome. I can't wait till next week. What should we tell everybody to do until next week?
Hug your chickens and ducks and geese.
Every day and kiss them too. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you'd like to see more of us, please follow us on Instagram at Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. If you'd like to help us grow the podcast, please leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts. If you'd like to become a patron of the show, please visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/coffeewiththechickenladies. Thanks for listening.